You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. So one of the things we talk about here on the show are the underlying reasons for binging. Like binging and emotional eating is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. The problem is often depression, anxiety, conflict, a myriad of other human emotions that we don't learn how to be with. And so we use food to numb, comfort, escape, etc. So that is why I am so excited to have my guest today, Dr. Bob Rich. He is going to talk about how positive psychology can help us through tough times. Dr. Bob Rich has dedicated his long career to helping people have happier, healthier lives. He's written many books, both self-help and fiction, by the way, including From Depression to Contentment, all of which help you re-engineer your life. When we're happy, we don't use food for comfort or distraction from pain. And Dr. Bob is joining us all the way from Australia to be here on the show, where it is 4 a.m. That is such a commitment. So welcome, Dr. Bob. It's so great to have you back.
Well, it's lovely to see you again, Nina.
So in one of your interviews, you said, quote, "I am not a writer or a psychologist or in any such straitjacket, but I am a human. Given the motivation, time, and opportunity, I can do anything, and so can you," unquote. So I think it would be so helpful if you can share about your background and how you came to embrace and embody these ideas.
Well, actually, I'm not a human. I'm a citizen of this universe, and all sentient beings are my family. Birds, whales, cockroaches, oak trees, they're all my family.
But you did not start out life with such an attitude of embracing the world's beings. You started out not in Australia where you are now, but in a different way. Can you share your story?
Okay, in this life, the first thing that happened to me was that I was born. And while my mum was squeezing me out, a shot down aeroplane crashed into the hospital and wiped out the top 3 stories. This was during the Second World War, when most of your listeners were very, very young, right? Including you. And all painkillers and anesthetics were for the wounded. So a nurse sewed my mother up without any of those things. She got another patient to help her to dress. Then she picked me up before the hospital should collapse and walked through 2 feet of snow to walk home. That was 3 hours it took her. And that's how my life started. So that was in 1943. Then when I was 5 years old, my mother fell in love with this bloke. And he didn't think that I was the center of the universe. And so I hated him. And I declared war on him. And I won every battle. Think of this. There's a rug that people have walked on for hundreds of times. He steps on it and pew, lands on his bum. He sits down to breakfast and goes home, or goes to work, and doesn't know there is this melted butter spot on his on his bum, on his trousers. The electricity goes off in the whole block of four units, and he owned it, which was a pretty sneaky thing to do in a communist country, but he managed it.
And share the communist country where you were born.
That's Hungary, yeah.
Hungary, yes.
Mm. I tell people I was born in Hungary, but I was very young at the time, which is true. And nothing can fix it. And he goes to take his torch, and the torch doesn't work. So he calls the electrician, who flicks the switch on. Of course, the switch on, is way too high for me to reach. I couldn't possibly have done it. But I did. I got him. So I won every battle, but he won the war, because when the Iron Curtain got a rust hole in it in 1956, he shoved me through it and kept the rest of the family behind. And I ended up in Australia, where from a wretched monster, spoiled child, I got converted into a good person thanks to a few angels, like my high school principal, who was a pretty smart bloke. He was the only person in the school who could sometimes beat me at chess. And he had special sessions with me to teach me English and took me home so his wife could give me lovely meals. You see, because my family was in Hungary, I was in a migrant hostel, I had no other family. And so I decided I could do worse than to copy him. And there were many others. And so I became a good person. Does that answer your question?
Well, I think there's a lot to becoming a good person, and I don't know that you were a bad person, but you were a bad person. Okay. So you believe in change, and you believe people can change. You know people can change because you have changed. And one of the things that you know you talk about is turning triggers into laughter, the ideals of positive psychology. And the term positive psychology is used a lot, and people often think it means just be positive. But that is not the case. Can you share, before you talk about how to turn triggers into laughter, can you share what positive psychology is and is not?
Okay. People who experience anxiety, depression, addictions, just generally being down, can use psychotherapy to climb up to normal. But normal is the walking wounded. Most people are not happy, not contented in their lives. Positive psychology takes you from normal into being able to cope with absolutely any situation. So it doesn't mean denying what's bad. It doesn't mean, oh, dancing around on the roses. Ooh, I wouldn't want to do that. There are thorns in there. But that's an example of positive psychology, right? And what you were talking about. Positive psychology doesn't mean necessarily using humor, but there are 20 or 30 positive psychology tools. And in addition, although not normally considered to be part of positive psychology, there are various tools, the strongest being something that Buddhists call equanimity or acceptance. And this is an attitude that's in all the religions, and it is not a religious concept. It's a philosophical concept. Whatever is, and I can cope. And a famous exponent of this attitude was Martin Luther King. Wonderful man. I think he was an enlightened person who said things like, you know, you can put us in jail. We love you anyway. you can come in the night and murder us, and we love you anyway. And whatever you do, we love you anyway. And we'll fight hate with love. And we accept it all. That's equanimity. And you mentioned before our show this terrible tragedy, this latest school shooting. That's my immediate reaction. My immediate reaction was, is that poor young kid, and I'm in the shooter. My immediate conception was, reaction was compassion for him. And I mean, automatically the victims and their families, but I include him in that. I don't hate him. I pity him. Because he was consumed by hate. I don't know why he did this insane act. But in my life as a therapist, I have often dealt with people who have done terrible things. And first you've got to be able to feel compassion for them.
Well, I think that is a tall order for many people to feel that compassion. Like, you know, we are living through some terrible times. We have COVID, we have the climate crisis, we have a war in Ukraine, we have the decline of human rights all over the world, the rise of fascism. So how can positive psychology help us through difficult times if someone says, well, I can't just say, oh, I have compassion for people. I'm living through hell. What do I do? What would you say to those people?
I'm living through hell and I'm doing my best anyway. Look, I'm playing basketball. My team is down 50 points and I've got the ball and I can go for a clear shot. Will I bother? Of course, I'll do my best and I'll shoot and then we're only down 47 points. Look, we are not on this planet to be happy, to be successful, to be rich, to have stuff. We're on this planet to grow spiritually. That's all that matters.
How do you define spiritually? I ask the tough questions at 4 a.m. Australia time.
Oh no, the 4 a.m. doesn't bother me. I'm sort of full of adrenaline, ready to go. Look, I'm a scientist. I don't believe anything. I go with the evidence. And some things have hard evidence. For example, you mentioned the climate crisis. It's not a question of is it true or is it not. Any more than, you know, there's all that water falling out. There's not a question. Is it raining? It is raining. You know, there is a climate crisis. The evidence is there. But in some instances, there is no hard evidence and you cannot get hard evidence. In that case, what I do is I construct a model of reality, the best I can with what I've got, and I tentatively act as if it was true. And if new evidence comes in, I reform that model. Well, I won't go into the details. There's a huge amount of that evidence at my blog, which is bobbing around, and you might be kind enough to put the link in so people can visit it. But my conclusion is that the universe is a conscious person. I'm not religious, but if you wish to, you can call it God. I think of it as a sentient flower. And we are all part of it because all is one. There is no division. So I'm a part of God. You are a part of God. That poor insane boy who just got killed by the police for murdering so many people, he's a part of God. And our universe is a young person. Again, this is my current model, who needs to grow and needs to develop lots of brain cells. And that's an analogy, but that's all we can do with truth. And these brain cells are sentient beings who have achieved the final lesson. The final lesson is Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Jesus, the Buddha, Confucius, you know, people like that, who intuitively, without needing to think about it, can give universal love to anybody. Not can, but do. It's just their first reaction. I'm not there yet.
Including ourselves?
Most important. That's the hard part. That's one of the things I'm still struggling with. But look, coming back a little bit, when I was a teenager, my reaction to bullies was to belt the out of them. I only had 3 fights in high school, and each time it was to pulverize a bully. Now, my immediate reaction is to say, how can I help this person out of this aggression? That's my growth. So if Martin Luther King is an adult, I'm maybe 18 years old, and as a teenager, I was maybe 16 years old.
And it is so important to show that level of compassion to ourselves, because what I find, especially with people who struggle with binge eating or emotional eating, is that they are so harsh and terrible to themselves, which then they eat just to get away from their own mean voice. So I want to just quote you again. You've also said that when you were younger, a mistake was a surefire trigger for depression. And I know you struggled a lot with depression. And now you say, anyone who has never made a mistake is a liar. So yeah. From being triggered into depression, oh my God, I made a mistake, to, okay, I made a mistake. Can you tell us about that shift, that journey for you?
Well, my stepfather's sayings, I rejected, completely rejected at the time, but I internalized them. So inside me, there is this damaged little boy. And in my book, From Depression to Contentment, I describe how I transformed him from an inner monster into a little boy I need to give love to. So just pick him up and give him a hug, pet him on the head. It's okay.
Well, I've read the book, and I think that the inner monster that you refer to is an overstatement. You're a kid dealing with a lot of loss and change and anger and sadness.
Yeah. Anyway, this is one of the positive psychology tools. Look, another thing is, something happens. Say I'm late for an appointment, or suppose that right now while we're talking, my microphone went silly and started making horrible noises. Mm-hmm. It's probably not fatal, and if it is, you've got to die of something. Why not a faulty microphone? What are you laughing about? This is serious.
Seriously amusing and thought-provoking, yes. Mm. So to have you're saying have perspective, to not shame ourselves for mistakes. Yeah.
But also, at my blog, I've got an essay called The Onion and the Pearl. And it's only about 400 or 500 words long. And it's also part of one of my books, which is called Lifting the Gloom, Antidepressant Writings, which is a series of short stories and essays. And then each little section has a discussion. And it's a companion volume to From Depression to Contentment. Oh, and all the bits about my life that I described early on in response to your question are in my book, Ascending Spiral, which is actually my autobiography, except it isn't. I fictionalize it for 2 reasons. One is I don't want to be sued, so it's to protect the guilty. And the second is It's actually a psychology tool. If you want to improve your life, create a character who is you in every way, except in all your past decisions where you made the wrong choices, this person makes the right choices. And having created the character, you step into the role and then you act it. You act as if you were that person. So the hero of my story is Ending Spiral is Pip. And in whatever I do now, I need to act not as if I was Bob, but as if I was Pip. And that's not a positive psychology tool. It's from something called acceptance and commitment therapy. But like I said, I hate categories. I just put everything in together. Whatever works, works.
Indeed. Yeah. Whatever works, works. So if you could say, how do we change the way we respond to triggers? You know, if you were to just sum it up, how do we change the way we respond to triggers?
There are many ways, but that's, I've just described one of them. Act as if.
Oh, guess right? What? The audio is going a little funky.
Oh, no, no, it's going to kill me. Is it better?
No, it's not better.
1, 2, 3?
No.
Oh. I'm going to cry.
Maybe can you welcome to live radio, everyone? Unplug it and just use whatever the device is. Now we don't hear you at all. Sam is saying wiggle the cord a little bit. Oh, you're also muted. Yeah, you're muted somehow.
How is that?
Oh, that's much better. Okay. Phew.
Oh, thank the Lord, Harry. That didn't kill me. Maybe it has. Maybe I'm a ghost. You never know. After all,
you're still a sentient, non-human human. So you're good, and now we can hear you.
Anyway, acting as if. Another story in this book, Lifting the Gloom, is about a fellow who was a real monster, and he was a millionaire, a magnate in the 19th century. And because it was hurting business, he pretended to be a philanthropist. And after 30 years or so, it was the meaning of his life. So, if you want to become something, act as if you already were, and then you become that.
What about turning triggers into laughter? Which is not to say that all triggers should be turned into laughter, but how do we take an approach of, instead of feeling shame and guilt and embarrassment from triggering situations, how do we convert that into amusement?
Well, I have a teacher I've never met. In fact, she's in America. But she sends me a weekly email, and I've occasionally attended some of her online thingamajigs. Her name is Pragita Dove, and she's a Buddhist teacher. And one of the things that she said that stays with me is that there is no need for forgiveness. Everybody does the best they can do at the time. So if someone hurts you, they do the best they can, and it's okay. All they can do is learn in the future. And if you've done something that's terrible, you've done the best you could do at the time, there's no need for forgiveness. You just move on and learn from it.
But how does that help you process what that person did? That sounds like let it go almost.
No. None of this means that you stop struggling. Right? If I see an injustice, I'll do everything possible to correct it. But that doesn't mean that I need to hate the perpetrator.
So, of course.
A while ago, it was quite some time ago, in Britain, there was this crazy man who attacked a couple of young women because they were wearing hijabs. They were Muslim. And three men came to their aid, and this fellow pulled a knife and killed two of them and mortally wounded the third. And this young man, only 23, with his dying words were, "I love everybody. No, tell everybody in this on this train, I love them." Everybody in this on this train included the attacker. He was an enlightened spirit, or he became then an enlightened spirit in the last second. You don't have to live perfect; you only have to die perfect in order to be enlightened.
So a lot of what you're talking about has to do with our relationships with other people, people who hurt us, circumstances that affect us. What about our relationship to ourselves? How
Same
do we
thing.
Set our relationship to ourselves if we don't like ourselves, if we don't, if we're hard on ourselves, if we feel self-conscious about many things from our appearance to our accomplishments? What do you say to someone who says, well, it's not about other people, it's about how I feel about me?
Okay. For a long time, my tool was, I knew that I was damaged inside. And I knew that my self-assessment was faulty. So I would use the assessment of other people of me, the positive assessment. Other people thought of me a lot better than I thought of myself. I said, they're correct and I'm wrong. And in a way, this has happened quite recently. We've just had elections in Australia, and we got rid of the worst prime minister of all times. He's gone. He was our Trump. I don't care if some of your listeners are Trump supporters. He's an infant soul. But anyway, we're not going to talk politics.
But do you love him? But wait, do you love him?
I feel sorry for him. I feel compassion for him. And I wish I could sit down with him and lead him to growth. I don't have that power. I don't have the opportunity. But if I had a magic wand, I would lead him to growth. I would not want to punish him or ridicule him or anything. I want only the best for him. But the best is to get out of his delusions. But anyway,
pretty hard to change a malignant narcissist's views. But I appreciate your optimism.
No, that a person is like that because it's an infant soul, not yet developed the ability to feel empathy. And I've worked with people like that, but only with them personally with me. It's a bit difficult to do it when you've never met and never will. I don't have a magic wand. But look, I've always prefer to work in the background. I'll work my butt off for a cause, but I'll typically be the secretary and the support person. And recently, I was on the campaign committee for my electorate in this election. And these two wonderful young women were the leaders. They were the conveners. And one had an argument with the candidate, so they couldn't work together. And the other one got a full-time job and has two little children. Now, I love the candidate lady. I love the both of these. They're great people, but suddenly the team fell apart. And so I said, all right, I'll lead, but, you know, you'll need to help me. And you know what? I did a brilliant job. It all came together, and we did a fantastic achievement. The candidate really worked her butt off. She was passionate, she was eloquent, she did well, and she increased her vote. All the team members pulled together, and they found my leadership inspirational. I didn't know I could do that. And then I thought back, all through my life, going right back to my teenage years, I've always been a leader, but I didn't know it. I don't know if that answered your question, but I thought it has.
Well, I think you're saying that we have a narrative about ourselves, and we tend to what we tend to remember or believe what sticks to the narrative. And when we actually, that's a construct in our minds. And when we change our filter, we can create a new narrative and see ourselves more realistically and see the qualities and features that we have overlooked that we might start to appreciate. Because when we're focusing so much on what we don't like, we miss all the likable, lovable parts of ourselves.
Nina, don't tell anybody, keep it a secret, but you're a genius. You have just reinvented narrative therapy. That's the essence of narrative therapy. And another way of saying this is, whatever you believe is true. If you believe something with full belief, it's true. If you believed that you can float up off the ground and levitate, if you fully believe it, you could do it.
Mind over matter?
No, just mind. That's what the universe is. The universe is life spirit. And little bits of life spirit is attached to a body. I've got another wonderful friend I never met called Patria King, P-E-T-R-A, Patria King, also a wonderful writer, who has said, your body is a spacesuit for surviving on this planet. You are not your body, you're using your body. So, I'm not all that pretty. It's only a car I'm driving, who cares? So, if I were absolutely beautiful, actually that would be quite a handicap in some ways. If I was ugly on the outside, it's a spiritual beauty that matters. I've got a character in my stories whose face was terribly battered when he was a kid by his father. He killed his father when he was 14. That's the son, not the father. And yet, the last line of the story is this woman looks at him and said, your face may look like a tank drove over it, but your aura tells me inside you are beautiful. And actually, quite a bit of my writing, I don't put a theme in my writing. I don't write in order to preach. I listen to my characters. That's in my fiction writing. There are no characters in my non-fiction writing for some reason, except when I use a case study. But my characters came to me and they talked to me and I listen and I write it down. I'm only a recorder.
I don't think you give
yourself
enough credit.
No. I'm just a channel. So, for example, one day, a little girl came to me one morning. And she told me she was born in 1850. And what happened was she's an Australian Aboriginal woman was raped by a white man, which was very common in those days. They didn't consider them to be humans, just, you know, terrible discrimination. Far worse than what black people suffered in America, if you can imagine that.
It's hard to imagine that.
Well, if a white man casually killed a black person, it was no different than shooting an animal. And anyway, so her mother called her in their language. Her mother's name was Glindy, so she was Mama Glindy, which is Glindy's sorrow. And this girl told me her story. And no, I wasn't hallucinating. I'm not schizophrenic, although nothing wrong with being schizophrenic. I know some wonderful people who are. But that's another story. But she had the gift of love. She could touch you and you'd feel good, as long as you didn't hate. She couldn't get through hate. And her story is full of deep, deep feelings, adventures, good and bad. And people have told me it's a page turner. What's more, when they start it, they've got to finish it.
What's the name of this story?
Well, would you believe it's Mary Glindy, Guardian Spirit? And she grows to 14 years of age, and then she's murdered in horrible circumstances. But even then, the story turns out positive, because almost immediately her attacker dies, and then she's there as a spirit to embrace him with unconditional love, because she's a guardian spirit who has never been a human but sent to our planet to be a guide to us. But first she has to experience human lives, and being Mary Glindy is the first. And then in the last third of the book, she's born again, and she's the daughter of this young couple, which is surprising. How else can you be born? But anyway, so it's a lovely story, if I say so myself. And always my latest book out is my favorite. So for the moment, this is my favorite.
Well, it's interesting how you infuse the characters with the principles that you live your life, with which you live your life, and with the themes. Like,
No. I don't do anything of the sort.
You don't?
No. My characters come to me. But look, one of my characters, it's so far not published. I'm at the moment pestering publishers and agents about it. It's a series called The Doom Healer. But one of my characters is evil, utterly evil, and that's his job. He was sent to our planet 10,000 years ago with the mission of destroying all sentient life on this planet with as much misery as possible. He's good at his job. So when I'm writing from his point of view, then that's what comes out. Or, you know, one of my other books is Hit and Run, which is also, you know, very much a page turner, in that a 14-year-old boy, actually, what synchronicity with the tragedy today? He stole a car and drove over seven little kids and the crossing supervisor, narrowly missing an old lady, an 84-year-old lady. And then that 84-year-old lady leads him to growth. And there's at the memorial for the victims, people talk about vengeance. And she feels forced to get up on stage, also, she's never done anything like that before, and says, I can't quote it word for word, but hate only leads to hate. Vengeance only leads to vengeance. The only thing that can defeat hate is love.
And that is beautiful, and it is so true, not just interpersonally and relationally, but intrapsychically between parts of us. The only thing that can defeat self-hatred is self-love, and coming to a place where you can love and appreciate and accept yourself is everything. Of course, from my perspective, you've got to figure out how you came to hate yourself in order to love yourself. But ultimately, it is love that is the most freeing.
Okay, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, positive psychology tools is forgiveness. My healing started when at 21 years of age, I met my stepfather again. And I learned to like him. We became friends. And that's when it took me 2 years from there, but I got on top of my depression as a result of having forgiven him. And so at 23 years of age, I became normal, you know, the walking wounded. And a trigger would come along. For example, I'd make a mistake and I'd crash. And I could enjoy being miserable for a while, anything from a couple of hours to 3 weeks. Then I'd use my tools and climb up again. You know, incubating a spider, climbed up the water spout. You got that in America?
Yeah.
Down came the rain.
Yeah.
Well, at 43 years of age, I noticed that it didn't happen anymore. A trigger would come along and I'd be okay. And what happened was that during that time, I either invented for myself or I learned or I copied from clients the positive psychology tools, which are in my book or in my books.
All 19 books, right? And can you share maybe a couple of other tips, tools in the toolbox to help turn triggers into laughter?
Okay. You can develop little personal cliches. You've got a few of them. Is anybody who's never made a mistake is a liar. If someone else can do it, I can learn it. It probably won't kill me, and if it does, that's all right too. Whatever your worst demon, find a funny way of reacting to it. Find one that you find funny. Doesn't matter if other people don't. The other thing is, here is a very important one. For many people, what a judgment by others is terrible. I must seem to be okay. Who cares? I don't care what other people think of me. When I did, I tried so hard that people often dislike me for it. When I was, I just do what I do, and if other people don't like it, it's their bad luck. People started liking me.
But how did you get there? Because you just read my mind. I was going to say, so many people are so self-conscious about what other people might be thinking of them, or you know, creating a persona on social media, or trying to just you know, present some image of what they think they should be. How did you get from feeling that way to this level of acceptance?
Well, I was a therapist, and I had to lead many of my clients, particularly people with social anxiety, out of that attitude. So I explained to them, for everybody else, the case is, I am the star of my drama. So for, you know, Mary Smith, my client, she thinks that really that she is the center of her universe and everybody else is there judging her. No, there's everybody else is, for each of them, I am the center of my drama, and you, Mary Smith, are a walk-on. you're just a two-dimensional thing here to react to me. And so they're not judging you. They're so busy worrying about you judging them. And then I thought, hey, you know what? That doesn't just apply to Mary Smith. That also applies to Bob Rich. And nowadays, I know I'm not the center of my universe. I am a small droplet of the center of my universe, which is my universe. Look, a good friend of mine is Benjamin Franklin. I mean, I was a bit young when he was alive, like, you know, in a previous life. But when he was bothered, I've got a guided imagery script on that at my blog. So if you go to Bobbing Around, and there's a list of categories which for some reason WordPress put at the bottom, you click on guided imagery, it's there, one of the guided imagery script. But when he was bothered, he'd go outside under the starlit sky. And of course, no artificial light in those days, so it's not so easy to do in the city, but the concept is still there. And he said, look, my worries seem so big to me. I'm standing on the earth. This earth is home to so many people and so many other animals and so many plants. Compared to all that great number, I'm such a tiny person, such a small part. And this earth revolves around the sun. Compared to the sun, the earth is so small that from the nearest star, you wouldn't even be able to detect it. And if you look up at the sky, all those many stars, and if you rose above the atmosphere, all the stars that you could see then are such a tiny part of the galaxy that we're a part of. The galaxy is so huge that compared to it, our sun is next to nothing. And our galaxy has a neighbor, Andromeda, which is four times as large. And if you put our galaxy and Andromeda together, there are so many galaxies out there that compared to all of them, it is as nothing. And that is the universe. And sure, I'm a part of it, but such a small part. Isn't that a comforting thought? All my troubles are such a small part. It's okay.
Well, may I be a bit of a devil's advocate? And we only have a couple minutes left, but I still want to say, can that also be dismissive?
No.
Isn't it kind of like, well, what are you worried about in the vastness of the universe? What's your trouble?
Okay. Say I wake up in the middle of the night with sore feet. It can happen because, you know, I've got an old body. My spacesuit is severely battered. How does that compare to the people in Ukraine?
But you still have sore feet.
Yeah.
Can't you have both?
How does that compare to the inner agony of Vladimir Putin?
But you still have
Putin has caused monstrous damage because the poor bug is suffering.
Yeah.
I still have, yeah, sure. I go to the emergency department in the hospital with a broken finger, and next to me is a fellow with a broken back. My finger is still hurting.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I can accept it. Look, compare. And I don't even have to compare. It's only my finger. But anyway, there is really no answer to that. The only way out is to find your own path. The Shinto religion, original religion of Japan, has a wonderful saying, there are many mountains to God and many paths up each mountain. They're all valid.
Can you say that again? There are many...
There are many mountains to God and many paths up each mountain.
Yes. Yes.
So you find your own path. I cannot ever walk your path for you. I can't carry you on my back. All I can say is, look, here is a path. If you walk on that, see where it leads you. And something works for everybody, but nothing works for everybody. So there is a path for you, but it may not be the path for me.
I love that. Something works for everybody, but nothing works for everybody. So true. Well, Bob, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your story and your attitude of hope with us. Please tell people how they can find you.
All right. I hope, Nina, you'll put the link to my blog.
Yes.
But anyway, if you use a search engine, I refuse to use the G word because Google hates me and I hate Google. But
don't you also love Google?
Oh, it's not a sentient being, not yet. Okay. It's on the way. But if you search for excuse me, Dr. Bob Rich bobbing around, it should come up. It's all there.
And people can access your books, which are also on Amazon, and everything else that you've referenced today. They can find all of that there. I will put the link in the description for the show notes so that people can find you. Absolutely. And I just once again want to thank you for sharing your wonderful, hopeful, reassuring, soothing spirit with us today.
And remember, you're an apprentice. Excuse me. Remember, you're an apprentice Buddha.
Apprentice Jesus. Okay. Aren't we all? I hope you can go back to sleep, Bob. Thank you for being here at 4 a.m. Australia time, now almost 5 a.m. That is true commitment. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and have a beautiful rest of the day. And that is the show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, here live on LA Talk Radio, and you can listen later or watch later, as the case may be, on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. Stay curious, not critical. Love yourself, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.